Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
Hi, folks. So glad to be with all of you again. And don't forget my book, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety. Understanding and Overcoming Your Negative Emotions. I still haven't put it on my intro. My lapse, folks. I'm hoping to make contact with my guest today, who is Peter Gertje, who is an amazing physician from Denmark, but we're having trouble connecting. However, that's not too bad for right now, because I want to tell you about the upcoming conference in Denmark, to be followed by another in London. The conference in Denmark is going to be September 15th. And you, especially those of you in Europe, spread this around. It's going to be in Copenhagen. And it's going to be in a place called Bethesda. Conference is going to feature Peter, Robert Whitaker, and myself, and I'll be Skyping in firsthand conversations. It's going to be just like I'm there. They're going to have great big speakers and big screens, big screens. We've checked it all out. It's going to work really good. And then the following next day after, so this is Wednesday, September 16th, then on the 18th, I'm going to be giving a talk in London. I'll give you more information on that. But again, I'm not going to these conferences. I've had to cancel going, but I'm going to be live Skyping again and having interactive conversations. And again, it's going to be with Peter Gertje and also wonderful Robert Whitaker. We're going to talk all about all the various drugs and the ins and outs of the drugs and the alternatives to drugs. Not just my alternatives, but the alternatives of other folks. This is going to be a really, really good conference. So look it up on the website. Look it up, rather. I think you can find it through Peter Gertje. And his name is spelled G-O with a line through it. I don't know if you need that. I don't think you do. G-O-T-Z-S-C-H-E. Let's get some European and attendance from around the world at this really excellent conference. I'm going to be doing more and more conferences by Skype, so keep that in mind. That's going to be one of the ways that I get around easily while staying near my family and getting all of my work done. As I said to you, we're having difficulty connecting with Peter. I'm not sure why. So I'm going to go on and talk to you about some topics that I really feel are not being addressed enough from my work. I want to talk to you about the problem associated with not being able to recognize the adverse effects of psychiatric drugs on ourselves and on other people, but particularly on ourselves. I call it medication spellbinding. I write about it in Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and I write about it in Medication Madness, which is my book that gives all the really interesting and many tragic cases about people who commit violence and suicide and criminal activities on psychiatric drugs and have no idea whatsoever what they're doing. There is something in psychoactive, and by the way, this is incredibly important because I think without understanding medication spellbinding, which scientifically I call intoxication anosognosia, you have no concept of why so many people take psychiatric drugs, smoke marijuana excessively, drink alcohol, and harm people. So this is it's just a concept of great importance. And just in time, as I'm finishing the concept, we do have Peter coming online. Peter, are you there?
Yes, but the connection is not very good. You need to speak louder.
You can't hear me now?
I can, but no.
If I speak a lot louder than this, it's going to sound really weird to people on my side
okay.
Who are listening to me. So I'm going to check with the engineer and see if what he thinks, whether he can increase the volume to you. Can you increase volume to my guest? Folks, I have, when we work here, we have pretty good technology working with Progressive Radio Network. I'm instant messaging back and forth with my engineers. We were having trouble with the connections. So before I hand you, explain who Peter is a little more and hand you over to him, I want to just finish up with this idea of medication spellbinding because it is so important. So what happens to people is that they take a drug. It could be a pretty innocent drug. Maybe it's an antihistamine. Maybe it's Benadryl. And then they wake up in the morning and they get one of the adverse effects that doctors don't talk about from Benadryl. They wake up being irritable and anxious, maybe a little angry. They're uncomfortable with themselves. And they yell at their wife or their husband or their children. They have no idea it's the Benadryl. How do I know this? Because I have allergies and I took Benadryl many, many months ago, quite a while ago. And twice in a row, this happened to me. And twice in a row, my wife had to say, no, honey, think about it now. You never wake up irritable and angry. That's really not. You wake up welcoming the sunshine, raring to go, like a young person full of zest for his activities. And indeed, it was the Benadryl. I tried it one more time. Same thing happened. So even somebody who really is sophisticated about all this, like myself, doesn't know what's happening to him when he's taking drugs. That could be happening to you right now. You could be more depressed from your antidepressant. You could be suicidal from your antidepressant. It could be happening to your family members. For whatever reason, I think it has to do with impairment of frontal lobe judgment centers. We don't realize the effects of psychoactive substances on ourselves. Alcoholics will go downhill and not realize they've destroyed their lives and think that they need alcohol. So this is a pattern. I'm going to cut that short now, but I wanted to just – I thought that that was a very important and good filler while we were locating Peter. Peter Goetze, his name is spelled G-O-T-Z-S-C-H-E. Peter, how do you describe that line through the O?
Well, I don't know really how it's described, but we love these special O's in Danish. We have them in my city, in my last name. The city of Copenhagen is called Copenhagen. It is an O with a line through it.
Well, if folks can't make the O, they can still get you on G-O-T-Z-S-C-H-E. I have huge admiration for Peter Goetze, Dr. Goetze. I invited him on the basis of his writings to come to our conference in Michigan. I was blown away by him. Peter is an outstanding researcher, many scientific publications. He runs a scientific, he created and runs a scientific network that he's going to tell you about today that attempts to put real science into medicine. He was doing that for quite some time. And then he kind of started looking at psychiatry, and that really made him even, I believe, more dismayed. Peter is a genuine scientist and a genuine good man. His newest book is Deadly Psychiatry and Organized Denial. It's from the Copenhagen People's Press. It's coming out just about now, September 2015. His previous book, which is enormously educational, is Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Healthcare. And that's from London Radcliffe. And that's only 2 years ago, 2013. And again, I don't think Peter was on the line at the time. The conference is going to be in September 16th in Copenhagen. I'm going to let Peter tell you more about the conference. I told you about Bob Whitaker and I are both going to be there, although I will be Skyping, as I will be doing more and more. But it's an interactive Skyping. It might even be better than seeing me in person. You can see me on huge screens and hear me on big speakers. So let me welcome Peter to the show. Are you hearing me any better?
Yes, it's fine now.
Oh, good. I think they found a way to correct that. Where would you like to begin, my friend? We haven't lost too much time, and I got to talk about, before you got on, all about the conference. How do people get information on the conference? I told them to go to your name. Is there another way to get information on the conference?
Yes, that's very easy. I have a website, which is called Deadly Medicines in plural and in one word, and then .dk, DK for Denmark. So I announce the conference there, and people can also search on Google, and because the conference is called Psychiatric Drugs Do More Harm Than Good, so it's easy to find.
Talk about the conference, advertise the conference, talk about your book, advertise the book. I want people to hear about you. So I'm going to just hand the mic over to you, Peter.
Yes. First of all, I contributed to starting the Cochrane Collaboration 22 years ago. We were around 80 people who were very dissatisfied that you cannot trust the medical scientific literature. There is so much bias in it and so many vested interests, so much money involved and so on. So we decided to start the Cochrane Collaboration to collect the randomized trials and summarize them and analyze them critically to become wiser. And 8 years ago, I was drawn into psychiatry by a person who wanted to do a PhD with me, finding out whether history is repeating itself, whether we are making the same mistakes with antidepressant drugs as we made 40, 50 years ago with the benzodiazepines, the so-called sleeping pills or nerve pills. And indeed, she found out that we make the same mistakes all the time. People got dependent on benzodiazepines, and people get dependent on SSRIs, these modern antidepressants, although the psychiatrists, many of them, the top psychiatrists, they deny that patients become dependent on antidepressants. But if you ask the patients, then more than half of them say, yes, we have difficulty stopping them again. So this is one of the harms of the antidepressant drugs, and indeed, of all psychiatric drugs, more or less, that you become dependent on them. It's difficult to stop them, even if you try to taper slowly over many months. And Peter Breggin himself is an expert in getting people off their psychiatric drugs. So I have researched psychiatric drugs for several years now, and I wrote this book to help the patients because we have an epidemic of overdiagnosis and overtreatment of psychiatric problems. And the worst thing about all this is that we actually kill many of the patients. These drugs are far more dangerous than people know. So I have estimated in my book that psychiatric drugs are the third major killer after heart disease and cancer. This is just incredible. And this is only in people age 65 and above, where psychiatric drugs are particularly dangerous, for example, because people might lose their balance and then fall and break a hip. And it's pretty dangerous to break a hip. One-fifth of patients will be dead within a year after a hip fracture. So this is just one of the ways that psychiatric drugs can kill people. There are many other ways. And if you look at the benefits of them, the clinical effect, it has been much exaggerated in the clinical trials. And I actually doubt that antidepressants have a true effect on depression. These drugs give people side effects. And therefore, the trials are not blinded adequately. People often know whether they get an active drug or a placebo. And then we know that both doctors and patients tend to exaggerate the effect. And if you put something in the placebo that also gives people side effects, a substance called atropine, for example, it gives people dry mouth and obstipation like active drugs, then the effect is gone. So it seems that it's more or less a fake effect that builds on psychology and on trials that have not been adequately blinded. So this is just to mention one of the drug groups that is incredibly much used nowadays. And people know far too little about the side effects. Peter Bregan alluded to this a moment ago. For example, half the patients or even more get sexually disturbed by taking antidepressants. They might lose their lust in sex, and males might become impotent, and there are many other sexual side effects. And the tragedy about all these harms is that people don't always realize that this is a drug side effect. They might think that it is the depression that have made them like this. So if you add up all the side effects and the fact that the benefit has been exaggerated and so on, it's difficult not to conclude that antidepressants don't seem to work, really. This is just to give you one example, but what really works is drug marketing.
Peter, let me cut in for a second. And first of all, I want to confirm, as my listeners know, that you know I agree with all of this. I think these are everything he's saying is absolutely true. And another reason that I'm sure Peter's aware of that people stay on these drugs even though they don't work is not only medication spellbinding that I mentioned earlier in the show, but when they try to come off the drugs, they go into horrific withdrawal effects. They can get horribly depressed. They can get suicidal. They can get violent, get shocky feelings through their bodies, and just an astounding array of painful emotions and experiences. And then they think that this means they need the drug. Well, they don't need the drug any more than an alcoholic coming off alcohol goes into the experience of the DTs, delirium tremens. So that is also one of the big confusions about why people think the drug is helping when it's not. I also wanted to just add one thing, by the way. When I was telling you all about this marvelous conference that he's putting on, I left out that there's going to be a really great group of people who have spoken out about their experience of people close to them who have committed suicide on the psychiatric drugs. There are going to be people from Europe and the U.S., and including my friend Matthew Downing from here in the U.S., who's just a marvelous woman. Go ahead on, Peter. I just wanted to add in a little bit, let folks know I'm still here.
Oh, your comments are very relevant. And there are even studies where people have stopped taking their antidepressant drug without knowing when it happened, because this was blinded. So they had been treated for a while, and they had become fine and well. And then suddenly their drug was substituted for a placebo for 5 to 8 days, but they didn't know when this would happen. And their doctors didn't know when this would happen. And what you saw in that study was that even though everybody was fine, then a considerable amount of these people, they got depressed very quickly when they came off their drug. And if you are not depressed, then the likelihood that you will get a depression within 1 to 2 weeks is very, very small. So what this study showed was that the depression these people got was exactly what Peter Bragan mentioned. This was a withdrawal effect. This was not a true depression. This was a side effect, a harm of the drugs. There is another reason why people have difficulty coming off their drugs, and this is a psychological reason that quite many people become psychologically dependent on their antidepressant drug. They feel they have become better. And the mistake is that most people will become better anyhow, even if you don't treat them at all. But when they have gotten a drug, both the patients and the doctors tend to believe this is because of the drug. No, it's usually the spontaneous healing of the depression. So when they have become well, they are afraid of stopping the drug for psychological reasons, and then they go on for years. Maybe you should come in here, Peter.
I think you're covering this really, really well, Peter, and I'm going to just encourage you to go on and talk more about your work, if you don't mind, something open-ended, or about the conference. Let me ask you, do you know if the London portion of my Skype trip, and where you'll be, and where Bob Whitaker will be in London? Do you know? And that's going to be on Friday, the Friday after the April 16th, on April 18th. Do you know if they have a website for that yet?
Yeah, it's September 16th.
September.
And 18,
I said April.
Yeah.
September.
Yeah.
Thank you. God, I hope I haven't said April.
Well, they have announced the program there. And let me just see if I can find it. I can do that pretty quickly because I have the meeting announcement here. Let me just see. This meeting, just take a while on my computer here. It is the Council for Evidence-Based Psychiatry that arranges this meeting. And the title of the meeting is similar to my meeting. It's called More Harm Than Good, Confronting the Psychiatric Medication Epidemic. So by Googling these words, it would be possible to find the program on the Internet. I don't have the URL for it right here.
Peter and I think that this conference is a really big deal in terms of getting some of the more unclouded ideas ideas unfettered by fear, anxiety, and wanting to adapt somewhat to the establishment, getting really clear ideas into Europe, and again on September 16 and 18. And I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm treating it like it's a live experience, because it's going to be, and I'm going to really be there on the Skype. Peter, have you been looking into the other psychiatric drugs?
Yes, I have. Well, and
talk a little bit about that. In about 5 minutes, I'm going to interrupt you, and we're going to we'll go to a break.
Yes, and particularly Bob Whittaker has looked a lot into ADHD drugs, and Bob and I have arrived at the same conclusion that these drugs are widely used now, and the effect is pretty doubtful. The trials are of very poor quality, and it's pretty certain that if you take these drugs for longer, for a couple of years or some years, then the overall effect is harmful, and this has been confirmed in animal experiments. So it's a tragedy that we treat so many, not even children, but not only children, but now also adults with ADHD drugs. So in my opinion, we shouldn't use these drugs at all. And I would like to mention antipsychotics as well, because the trials on antipsychotics are even worse than on ADHD drugs. And I can't explain here what the problem is with them, apart from one problem, that you typically take people who are already in treatment with such a drug, and then you randomize to placebo or another antipsychotic drug. And this means that you expose the placebo patients to a cold turkey, like if you take heroin from a drug addict. So they become pretty bad, and some of them commit suicide because of this. Then you compare a placebo group where you have harmed the patients with another group which do not get abstinence symptoms because they continue to get a drug. This is how almost all trials in schizophrenia have been carried out. They are incredibly unreliable. So what I did was I looked at old people, because I suppose that they had not been in treatment with an antipsychotic before. So I looked at the effect in people with Alzheimer and dementia, because there are trials in this. And what I saw in a meta-analysis, a summary of many trials, was that when you treat 100 elderly people with an antipsychotic drug, you kill one of them. So the death rate is 1 per 100. That's a pretty high death rate when you consider that these drugs are actually pretty horrible. Any doctor that has tried to take an antipsychotic drug just to see how it is will hardly believe the effects. These are pretty terrible drugs, and as many people know, they can lead to weight gain and diabetes and heart problems and all sorts of things. So that's just to give you a big background, a short background for antipsychotics. And I've also found a Cochrane review that compared antipsychotics with benzodiazepines, the old drugs, and actually disturbed psychotic patients became calmed down quicker on an old benzodiazepine than on an antipsychotic drug. So I wonder, do we need these drugs? And if we need them, mostly in acute phases, and then we should taper off them very quickly.
Again, I'm with you 100%. And, you know, we got started talking to you late today, not the show, but we got started on time. But we got talking to you late, so I think we'll just go right through break and just keep on talking, because this is so important to get this information out. The antipsychotic use of drugs is so bizarre I mean, the development of the drugs. Whereas Peter's describing, they'll take patients off of their antipsychotic drugs. These are patients who have been on these drugs, generally speaking, for 10 or 15 years. So we're talking about patients who no longer are just what they were like before they were put on the drugs. They now have chronic brain damage. Many of them have tardive dyskinesia. They're going to go into a withdrawal psychosis called tardive psychosis, many of them. They're certainly going to have horrible withdrawal reactions. And then, and this is torture, they'll randomly put some of the patients on the so-called new antipsychotic to see if it works, and they'll put some on placebo. Well, the ones on placebo are just going through horrible withdrawal. This is unconscionable. And the ones that are being put on the drug are not being cured of anything. They're just like people on alcohol withdrawn. Now they're being given alcohol. They're simply being given a drug that will abate their symptoms because it has some similar effects on dopamine. So the drug is approved as a treatment for schizophrenia usually, and no doctor that I've ever met knows that A, it was never tried on people within the first 6 months or a year of their treatment, of their breakdown. It was never tried on people who had no drugs at all. It was tried as a substitute for another drug to prevent withdrawal. This is so unconscionable. I've begun to write about it in some of my articles. It just is crazy. When I figured out what was going on, I couldn't believe it, that literally every person in the Western world who's getting an antipsychotic drug for their first schizophrenic break is being treated off-label because the drug isn't approved for the early months of schizophrenia, when you call it schizophreniform. It takes you months to decide that it's schizophrenia, and then you first call it schizophreniform. And no drugs are being tested in that early range. So the drug company is getting away with murder, as Peter literally told you, murder. They're killing people. And they have no basis whatsoever, none, for giving these drugs to anybody who's coming apart with a psychotic episode, because they don't do that. And the reason they don't want to try to do that, because certainly it would be a big breakthrough for somebody to claim, hey, we're the first ones to actually be testing these drugs on people who are becoming psychotic. The reason they don't want to is because when you put people, these young people usually on these drugs the first time, they have horrible adverse effects. They do everything in their power to stop taking them. This is an absolute outrage. And the other thing Peter mentioned about this, the 1% death rate, I think it was an elderly patients put on these drugs. If those patients have dementia, the death rate skyrockets. Now, I don't have it at the tip of my tongue, but looking through some of the NDAs for drugs like Abilify, the death rate for people who have dementia, which is most of the old people getting these drugs are going to be in nursing homes, are going to have dementia, is much, much higher than 1%. I think it gets way above that. And I will come back to you on a later show, folks, and give you that data. So I don't know if I'm saying anything new for you, Peter, but my mind's been blown away by some of my more recent realizations the last couple of years about these drugs. Are you there?
Yes, I agree with you. I have I am a specialist in internal medicine, but I have done research in many, many different areas, in cancer, in gastroenterology, in endocrinology, and lots in asthma, and lots of areas. Just like Peter, it's almost surreal to see what goes on in psychiatry. It's beyond belief. It's so far away from anything else in healthcare. The research is so poor and so flawed that it's just unbelievable. I agree with Peter.
And I think, folks, the reason why it's even worse than in general medicine, where it's pretty bad, and I think Peter knows a lot more about the general – I know he does a lot more about the general medicine than I do. The reason it's so flawed in psychiatry is because the drugs don't work. They have to figure out ways to fake it. Poisoning the brain is not a good solution to human emotional suffering. Whether it's children who are going to grow up on the poison, or whether it's adults whose brains are being damaged by the poison. I also, Peter mentioned earlier that if you take these stimulants for years, you know, you're going to have damaging effects. My research indicates the damage starts practically on the first dose, that within one or two doses of the stimulant drugs, people start having withdrawal, which means the brain is changing. Animal studies that show that within the first weeks, there are serious biochemical imbalances within the first weeks that don't reverse on stopping these drugs at about a period of, you know, several months. You're on them. In the animal studies, they don't necessarily reverse at all. And I'm at 100% so far. We got two classes of drugs that neither of us think should be used. The antipsychotics and the stimulants. And I'm also aware of what Peter is saying, that there were very early controlled trials showing that benzodiazepine, just helping somebody calm down in a hospital, was working as well or better than the antipsychotics, which really distress human beings. They're not comforting like getting a little sedated can be. Peter, go on. You're rousing me to express my feelings and thoughts here.
Well, it's I have read several of your books, and they have really stimulated me. So now I have published my own later this week, and I'm looking forward to having a debate of these things. It is very, very badly needed, and one of the things I will work on as much as I can is to put a ban on forced treatment in psychiatry. It is only soldiers who go to war that are forced to do something against their will that might kill them, and psychiatric patients. This is immoral. It is unjust, it is unethical, and the United Nations has issued a convention on people with handicap that says that all nations should put a ban on forced treatment in psychiatry. I will try to do what I can to make this happen, and I do work with some lawyers about this, and I'm currently involved in a court case in Norway that has been appealed to the Supreme Court. We must live up to the United Nations Convention, which almost every nation on earth has signed, but nobody has done anything so far.
I'm so glad, Peter. It's so exciting to see someone come from outside the field of psychiatry to look at it with fresh eyes, and to come to all the same conclusions I've come to, you know, and have been struggling with, as you know, very alone in the early years.
Yes.
This is just so marvelous, and I'm just so glad you're there. I'm so glad you're alive and doing your work.
Thank you, Peter.
Well, we've looked at the. But by the way, folks, you all may know, but you can go on my website and look at my recent scientific articles. I've written an article in a peer-reviewed journal. It's a European journal called Childhood and Society, and I've called for a ban on giving psychoactive substances to children to control their behavior or their emotions. Just a ban. Let's stop doing it. Let's work towards stopping it. And I agree 100%, of course, that involuntary treatment is wrong in principle. It doesn't matter what source you turn to, a principled thinking. It's not good. And, you know, it's been going on for several hundred years, and I don't know, maybe Peter does, I don't know of a single study, not one, that shows that involuntary treatment ends up with a good outcome, not even a better outcome than no treatment, with any kind of good outcome. I have no evidence of that at all. And there's some evidence that it humiliates people. Well, we know it humiliates people. And that can lead to a worsening of anger, self-hate, suicide, violence. Do you know of a single study after all these hundreds of years, Peter, that shows a good effect from involuntary treatment?
I haven't seen a single study on this. But if you look at all the circumstantial evidence there is, then I am pretty convinced that forced treatment does more harm than good. If not for any other reason, then we know that it kills some people. Even people who have begged for their lives, asking their psychiatrist, which they sometimes have described as their torturers, to stop giving them these drugs. And then, within some period of time, they were dead because of the same drugs they tried to avoid. Psychiatrists think that they do good to people. And if people think they do good to other people and they force drugs in them, then it's very difficult to stop this unless we do it in a legal fashion. And we simply must stop. There is no way around this. Now, I have found the website for the organization in the UK that makes this conference on the 18th of September. The website is CEPUK, CEPUK.org.
Folks, maybe some of you will come over from the United States to go to this conference. But this radio show goes all over the world. You know, you just go on to PRN.FM or you go on to Podbean, and there are the shows, and you can hear them live around the world. So those of you listening in Europe, tell your friends to listen to this show. Here are two of the people that are going to be talking. And believe me, Robert Whittaker is amazing to hear as well. And then you're going to hear people like Matthew Downing and Sarah Bostick and Leonie Fennell and other folks talking about people they know who have suicided on these drugs and what it means and what it does to people.
Peter, could I say a little thing about this?
Sure.
That I have met with these women, these five women who are going to tell about the son or daughter or husband they lost to an SSRI, to an antidepressant drug. I met some of them at a meeting in Los Angeles and others in Ireland where I was invited to give a talk. And what is common for these five women is that the person they lost was prescribed an antidepressant drug for no good reason. And then they killed themselves, some of them, after becoming seriously agitated with this extreme form of restlessness they describe as wanting to jump out of their skin. They can't sit still. They feel horrible. This is called akathisia, and it is also seen on antipsychotic drugs. So this predisposes to sudden suicide or homicide. So these five stories are all very tragic. You shouldn't prescribe an antidepressant because you are stressed at work, because a girlfriend left you or you left your girlfriend, or because you had problems at school and things like that. This is very, very bad medical practice. And yet it happens all the time, all over the world. Any sort of problem, then many doctors are prepared to prescribe an antidepressant, although it has nothing to do with depression or severe anxiety, which is another indication for these drugs. It is
absolutely
so sad.
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many mechanisms that that drive people to suicide on these drugs and to violence, because violence is fundamentally suicide is fundamentally violence turned inward. Nobody knows why some people go the violent way and some go the suicidal, because frankly, when this happens, it's often to people who have never been violent and never been suicidal. This akathisia is one, and also the extreme inner agitation with or without the abnormal movements, which you get with akathisia. Akathisia literally means inability to sit still. So you can get it with just the agitation can drive people over the edge. Another mechanism as well is manic psychosis, where people can do any kind of bizarre, damaging thing. I've seen that in some of my cases. All this is in Medication Madness, in my book. You also see that people on these drugs get indifferent to others. They lose empathy, the highest human function, so that they don't have empathy for themselves, for other people. They don't imagine what their suicide's going to do to somebody else, or they don't care. The loss of empathy unleashes the worst in human beings, and these drugs do that. So there's a variety of mechanisms by which this takes place. Peter, back to you.
Well, it's so nice to hear you talk about these things, because you know so much about it. If only the average psychiatrist knew half of what you know, the patients would be far better off, Peter.
Well, then they'd have to practice the way I do, which is I never give drugs except to help support withdrawal. I think once every year or two, I give with hesitation, a sleeping pill for two or three nights to help somebody get through a psychosis, because it can help to get a good night's sleep in the middle of a psychosis. But that's very rare that I do that. And I've never, Peter, you may not know this, I've never involuntarily hospitalized anyone in my career since my training was over. And with the blessings of God, folks, I've never had a suicide in my practice, and I've never had anybody get seriously violent in my practice. Now, some of that is really, I think, sometimes I wrote to Peter about this, but I think it's too much for him. Sometimes I feel protected that to do what I did when nobody else was doing it, I feel like I've been protected. So I've had some good fortune. But some of it is that by not giving the drugs, I don't make people worse. That's a real big key.
Peter, could I comment on that?
Yeah, sure.
Because when I tell other people, also psychiatrists, about your practice, then the standard comment is, oh yes, Peter Bracken lives in Ithaca in New York, and he probably sees wealthy patients with minor problems and so on, but the real hardcore psychosis he probably doesn't see, but we see them at our hospitals, and they certainly need antipsychotic drugs, so you can't compare our hospitals with Peter Bracken's practice. And I just want to tell you that I don't accept this explanation, and I will explain why. In northern Italy, in Trieste, they have forbidden any forced treatment because it was impossible to avoid. It was impossible to make psychiatrists understand that they shouldn't do it sometimes. So therefore, they got rid of it and said, now it's illegal. We can't use it. This forces the psychiatrist to work with their most seriously disturbed patients and to respect them without forcing drugs into them. And I have spoken also to an Icelandic psychiatrist who worked in the same way in England, where for the first 2 weeks they never used antipsychotics, not even in acute psychosis. They waited. And the experience is that if you don't force drugs into people, then if these people need something to be calmed down, then sooner or later they will ask for it themselves. You don't need to force it into them. And when they asked about it themselves, then you are still on good terms with them. You have not developed from a kind doctor into an ugly policeman that enforces things on people. You are still a kind doctor who tries to get a good relation with your patient. You cannot be a police officer at one moment and then the next moment think that you can have a valuable therapeutic relationship with the same person. It's, you just can't do it. So there are examples in this world that it can be done. So there are no excuses.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about those at the conference, folks. There's research projects. I've mentioned some of them to you on our show, and I've written about them in all of my books, including Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, The Better Alternatives. And about my practice, I started as an 18-year-old in a state mental hospital near Harvard and ended up running the Harvard Radcliffe Mental Hospital Volunteer Program when I was 18 and 19 years old. And I started working with psychotic patients on the back wards of these hospitals when I was a kid. And we got them out of the hospital. We had a program that was written up nationally. I went around as a kid lecturing to conferences about this. We showed that untrained volunteers with no more expenditure of staff than a once-a-week brief group meeting with us, that we were able to get almost all of our patients, I think the group was around 12 or 15, out of the hospital. It's written up in the first chapter of Toxic Psychiatry. So I have a lot of firsthand experience with this, and I have worked with very psychotic people over the years who often improved considerably without my ever giving them any medications. And I still do. I still do that. Peter.
Yes. Well, I am not looking forward to the next month, because when I published a newspaper article in a major Danish newspaper 1.5 years ago about 10 harmful myths in psychiatry that are very common and which harm the patients, I got into a lot of trouble from all sides, including from the psychiatrist and the National Board of Health and patient organizations, and even the Minister of Health came after me. And, I mean, these myths I described were, for example, that you suffer from a chemical imbalance, and now we have a drug that will fix your chemical imbalance, just like insulin is good if you have diabetes. Psychiatrists tell this to their patients. Over half of the patients have heard this, but it's not true. And there's no chemical imbalance to begin with, but the drugs create a chemical imbalance, which is so harmful. So it's the other way around. And many psychiatrists use this to convince the patients when they suffer harms from the drugs to go on with them instead of coming off them. Then they tell them, oh, you must go on. You wouldn't stop insulin in a diabetic, would you? And then they go on and on, hoping they will become better, and then they get more and more harmed. So these 10 myths I described created a big fuss in Denmark. But now I have, I say the same in my new book, but with a lot of documentation. So now we'll see what happens, whether we will succeed to create a good, honest international discussion of these issues, or whether the fight will be so dirty on part of those who feel that their self-image and their specialty is coming under attack, which it surely deserves. But nevertheless, people can behave very irrationally when they feel threatened. So I am not looking forward to the next month, because I think it will be pretty terrible for me. But I will take what comes, and then I hope I will be helped by people like Peter Breakin and Bob Whitaker when it goes out and becomes international. because there are many psychiatrists and scientists who have realized that the belief in biological psychiatry, that there are chemical imbalances that we will fix with drugs that are very specific. I mean, antipsychotic tells you that it corrects the psychosis, like an antibiotic kills the bacteria, but it doesn't. It just calms you down. It's not a specific drug. So
well, the antipsychotics, you know, Peter, you're being too kind, don't even calm people down. They lobotomize people. They don't kill bacteria, but they do kill brain cells. Isn't that good enough?
I agree, Peter, but what I'm trying to say is that we must all help each other to change psychiatry into something better than this. The biological society with too much reliance on drugs has been more or less a fiasco, as far as I can see.
Peter, we got about 2 minutes left, roughly estimated. I hadn't heard before that you've come under a big attack, and I guess it's recent. Anything I can do, and I'm sure anything that many people around the world can do, but anything I can do to help during this. This is what I faced in the 1970s, early 70s, when I first became a reformer and went after the lobotomists. It then ramped up again in the mid-80s when I started going more and more against the psychiatric drugs, and they finally went after my medical license, and I won. And the winning of that victory and the getting and seeking all the help I could get really changed the whole environment. And then basically they let up on direct attack. I'm sure I know the underground attacks continue to go on hugely, but I did weather those, and I suspect that you simply have to weather these attacks. And anything I can do to help, I'd be glad to. Peter, we have about half a minute left. Why don't you just say a few words to our folks as we say goodnight here? Goodbye.
Well, I could end with a joke.
Oh, God. No one's ever done that. Give it a try if you want.
It was one of the big filmmakers in America. Maybe it was Goldwyn Mayer, I think, who said many years ago that if you look up a psychiatrist, you need to have your brain examined. And that was a joke, but not only a joke. I would say that if you suffer from psychological or psychiatric problems, then with all their focus on drugs, it's actually more safe to look up a psychologist with your problems.
There is no doubt. Throughout the Western world, one of the most dangerous personal things you can do is to go to a psychiatrist. I do want to warn again, and I know Peter wholeheartedly agrees with me, don't listen to us and come off your drugs, because they change the brain, and coming off psychiatric drugs can be even more dangerous than starting them. You need to taper. You need to be surrounded by at least one person who loves you and is going to support you, and some good clinical supervision. Thank you, Peter Gercha. Thank you so much for being on the show.